Hey, everybody. I'm here on the floor of Planet Comic Con with somebody I met yesterday and just have been amazed to get a chance to talk to a little bit, Carol Barrowman. She's a writer, and in collaboration with some other guy you may know, named John something something, she has authored two biographies, five novels, including Hollow Earth from Simon & Schuster. They've also written Arrow the Dark Archer for DC Comics, as well as two Torchwood series for Titan Comics. Carol, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time.
I am so happy to have met you. I feel like we're old friends.
I know.
We got off that panel. We were in a panel together. It feels like...
I think it was Friday. Yeah, 18 years ago.
Yeah, right. It's con time, right? Don't you think about things in con time?
Yes, exactly.
You get con crud when you get home.
That's
you're
right.
Sick, and then but you time kind of is weird because we're in this massive building that you never get outside.
That's
but anyway,
right.
it was great. I loved the panel.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So since you mentioned con crud, do you have a prevention con crud strategy?
Drinking lots of wine at night before you go to bed and like you just kill whatever.
That's right.
I think actually I Stephen Amell was actually the person that gave me this advice. He said, don't use too much of the sanitizer. Don't wash your hands too much. Just take on the germs. You might get sick the first couple of cons, but then you're immune.
Okay.
Now, there is absolutely no scientific proof to any
right.
of that. But I figure when Stephen Amell gives you some advice, because he never gets it.
Right.
He never gets crud. John doesn't get it very much either, and he tends to be that way. He just, if he needs to put a little sanitizer, but you know what? We're in the world with everybody else.
Oh, right, so, right, right.
So, no, I don't have any strategies. I just hope that when I get home, the worst thing is sometimes when I get home, my husband gets sick, and then he gets pissed.
He gets secondhand con crud.
Right. So maybe that's a thing.
Right. I like that. I slam a lot of vitamin C before I come. I try
smart.
To do a lot of that. And then, you know. And
I drink a lot of water, actually.
I drink a lot of water. Yeah. And I'm a teacher. So I think at this point of the year, my immune system is already keyed up.
Me yeah. too. I think the same thing. I've already had so many young adults coughing in my face for a whole semester.
That's right. Right. And they're all desperate. Like, they're all sick and everything.
Know,
and yeah, I'm like, okay, we'll make it.
Right.
So I wanted to talk to you about, because besides being a writer, you're also an English professor. Is that correct?
I am.
Where do you teach?
I teach at Alverno College in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's a liberal arts college for women. And, you know, part of our mission is to educate women to be leaders in the world. Because God knows we need them.
100%.
Yeah. So, and this is actually my 30th year teaching there.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I feel like I should get some sort of award just for surviving.
Yes. Yes.
But it's, yeah, and I also direct their creative writing program.
Oh, wonderful.
And in fact, started the creative writing program probably about 5 or 6 years ago. Otherwise, I just always taught creative writing as part of the English department.
Right.
But this generation of students that have come up are more attuned to pop culture in a way,
right.
you know, than I think I was, because, you know, it just wasn't as accessible.
Right.
If that makes sense. I mean,
totally.
Like, nerds are everywhere, which is awesome.
Right.
But, you know, and I've always been one, but I've never felt like so welcomed and out there in the culture as I really feel like has happened in the last 10 years.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is awesome. And so I think there's a much more, so there was a need for us to educate some women in creative writing, and I am trying to get them into comics.
Yes.
I have some super talented artists and writers, and they just, it's partly because we tend to educate first generation women at
right.
Alverno, and their experience and their family background and where they are in the world just hasn't shown them that there are jobs in this comic market.
Right.
You know, and so when I talk to them about how, you know, John and I collaborate on the scripts, but then there's all these other wealth of other people we're collaborating with, including
right.
things like letterers and colorists, and they're like, is that a job?
Yeah. Yeah, and I was talking with this with a comic book writer the other day. Not only is it a job, it's a really important job for comics, and it's one of those unsung jobs.
Right.
And when you see somebody who's a really good colorist versus somebody who's maybe still developing, I'll say it that way.
Yeah.
You all of a sudden you see what a difference the colorist makes.
Yeah,
There's some showboat
Can't
going on
him.
Next door.
Some guy called Barrowman is singing. when I meet the doctor or when I met the wizard and playing around with Catherine Tate.
Right. He's shaking his moneymaker over here like he does.
Oh, my God. Now they're doing a duet. Awesome.
I didn't know there was going to be a floor show. This is amazing.
I know. You took me instead.
Gladly. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the books that folks can read. And I wanted to talk about Hollow Earth. We have fans who like books even that don't have pictures. So
that's so awesome because I love them too.
Yes.
So it's a series that we wrote for middle grade. It's considered high middle grade, which I don't understand who decides on these categories. You know, we decided we had a story to tell. We came up with these awesome characters, a brother and sister, funnily enough. And when they draw, their drawings come to life, and they can move in and out of art. And in the first book, Hollow Earth, they put themselves into a George Seurat painting.
Oh, okay.
Bathers at Assignieres. And so listeners can look it up and see what it looks like. And
it's there's ancillary pictures.
Yes,
it's just not in the book.
No,
you got to go out and get it.
You have to go Google them.
Little work.
Yes, that's right. I never thought about it that way. So it's a very inviting picture. The kids are really hot and they go for a swim. Well, of course, when they come out of the picture, you know, sort of all hell has broken loose because now they've revealed who they are. They don't really know who they are. They just have always had this power. They've kind of kept it hidden, sort of X-Men-ish.
Right.
And so the series is sort of what the trouble that gets unleashed.
Gotcha.
In this trilogy. They end up in Scotland, which, of course, John and I have. So the book is really awesome for fans because if you know us and know the world that we've come from, there's lots of cool Easter eggs. There's lots of family connections. There's a woman in the book who ends up being this. She's like in her 70s, and she is really ends up being one of the heroes.
Okay.
Which you don't get.
I love that.
Right? You don't get that a lot in these fantasy novels.
Correct, yeah.
And I don't think it's a big spoiler to say that because the book's been out in the world for a while. But
right.
We call her Mun. I'll have to talk in my Scottish accent now. We call her Mun, and she lived with us. We had a couple of strokes, and my mom's an only child. Mm. So she lived with us, and we adored her. We just adored her. So we've immortalized her in this series. And then there's also a main character who was the first character that we created, who's a young deaf teenager.
Okay.
So he signs, and the brother and sister learn to sign very quickly because, you know, they have superpowers, and it's fantasy.
Right.
But then he's also telepathic, and so he talks. And it was a challenge that somebody gave to me in my English teacher world. They said, is there any novels that have a first-person point of view with not first-person with a deaf character?
Huh.
So let me say that again.
Yeah.
So not first person with a deaf character. Because think, if you're first person and you're deaf, we're in your head, it's irrelevant.
Sit right.
It's easy to manipulate the world because it's through your eyes.
Right, totally.
So there have been some since. So if your viewers want to our listeners want to email me, I'm happy to have them tell me more.
I That's
know
awesome.
There's been some since. But and he ends up really being this awesome character. So then that's that trilogy. We then decided we wanted to get a little darker.
Right.
And so we have a new trilogy that's out called The Orion Chronicles. The first book is called Conjurer. And the new main character in that is a teenager from Chicago, African-American kid, who discovers that he can do the same thing with music that the brother and sister can do with art.
Oh,
so he can
super
alter
cool.
reality with his music.
Yeah. I love that idea. And I love, you're talking about this, but I love the different representation. That's a big thing that we talk about a lot in our podcast is even though we're, you know, three middle-aged white guys, we all have daughters. My daughter's from China. So, you know, we love to see different representation of different kinds of people. And they need to see representation
absolutely.
Of themselves in books.
And in the first trilogy, we really tried desperately to do that. And I had kind of a debate with someone on a panel once who said, we're great, who said, we are, readers can see themselves in the books. So if you just make it sort of a neutral description, then a young reader will see themselves. And so I did a little research, and that is not necessary. That is not true.
Right.
Some readers might.
Right.
But I think we need to see, and it's not difficult, to be honest, to write a diverse world when you're making everybody up.
Right.
Right? I mean, how hard is it?
Not that hard. not that hard. And I think sometimes, you know, you guys have the gravitas to be able to write sometimes, I think, the novel that you want. I talked to some artists last week at a show, and they said, hey, we're doing this art set for a calendar. We wanted to put in different people, and the publishers were like, you know, if you have a black person, then it's black art or whatever. And it's like, we're just, everybody needs to see everybody.
Right. Absolutely. See, that's even more important. I don't think it's true, but even if it's only white kids who are reading our trilogy, all the more reason that it's a diverse world.
Right.
In that book.
And I think we just demystify other, quote, other people who are really just people, but so that people don't look and say, oh, well, I don't know many of those people.
Right.
Well, then go meet them and talk about them and get to know them. And so,
well, and yeah, I also totally. Think one of the things that was a real mission for us in the first series with the art was, you know, most young people have a favorite author
right.
or a favorite book.
Totally.
Even if it's the only novel they've ever read, you know, they'll talk about how this book changed their life. We're sort of on a mission for young people to say, I have a favorite artist.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite painting.
Right.
Which is much more unusual. And
yes.
So a sort of sub-theme of this trilogy, and then I hope the trilogy that's coming next with the music is, this person influenced hip-hop. We're not very knowledgeable about hip-hop. So to be authentic with our character, we went with the blues and jazz.
Okay, great, yeah.
And so we made our main character in Conjure kind of a geek. So he and his parent, his mother and his aunt have educated him in the roots of the culture's music, which really was an out for John and I.
Right.
To not have to suddenly pretend that we are what we weren't as writers.
Right.
And still keep an authentic character who's not us. I mean, I am a middle-aged white woman, not an African-American kid from Chicago.
Right.
But never underestimate the power of an imagination.
Well, and I think if the only characters you write are the same kind of characters as you, it doesn't make a super interesting book necessarily.
That's a really good point.
Because it's like, oh, hey, it's a whole bunch of me.
Right.
Like, I don't even want to read about a whole bunch of me.
Me neither.
Like, I'm so bored of me.
Right. Well, and it's true. That's exactly right. And it's just like, if I'm going to have a fantasy life, it's not going to be being a middle-aged white woman from the Midwest.
No. Yeah. I hate it when I have a dream and it's just like me at work. I'm like, oh my God, that was the worst dream ever. Now I got to go actually do that.
All right. Well, it's like the comics, too. That's my favorite thing about writing comics because, you know, I would get to school and my students would say, you look really tired. And I'd say, you know what? But it's awesome because I was in the, I was in the mind of Gwen in Torchwood for 3 hours yesterday. Who can't have fun doing that?
There you go. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the comics that you guys have done. So you've written comics, and most of the comics you've done, I think, have been really related to characters that John
has played. Yes, franchise pieces,
right.
for sure. Although our stories have always been original, the very first one, and you'll appreciate this, this is the way to break into the business. Tommy Lee Edwards, we pitched with him to do Captain Jack's story in the 90s, and he was a huge fan, and we've become good friends with him now.
Right.
And Trevor Goring did the lettering.
Yep.
It's fabulous. It sold out. It was out of print for years, and you could only get it on eBay.
Right.
And then when we did this new series of Titan, with Titan, they reissued. It's called The Tale of the Selkie, and they reissued The Tale of the Selkie with their comic, San Diego Comic Con release of the first Torchwood. That's a very, very complicated, but anyway, so it's out again.
Right, awesome.
In some other format. But it was a short story I had won an award for years ago, and I loved this short story. I had won a Writer's Digest Award for it, and we had a fast turnaround. And so I said to John, and John always liked the story, and I said, how about we make this a Captain Jack story?
Yeah.
So we did, and it's actually about domestic abuse.
Oh, wow.
But with told as, well, fine. What your
I'll have to go read it. That's right. Go get it.
But
read
it's
it.
Really, it's about domestic abuse and how Jack steps in and really to protect this alien.
Mm-hmm.
But the subtext is It's pretty cool. It's cool.
Now, were you a Doctor Who fan at all before?
Oh, man, yes.
Yes, okay.
As I've said before, I'm a woman of a certain age. I actually am old enough to have been part of the original Doctor Who series and lived in the UK at
right.
the time.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, I was still pretty young then, but I remember bribing my dad. John, I think, was probably an infant at that point. But I remember bribing my dad and to let me stay up and see the show that everybody was talking about at school.
Right.
When we emigrated to the UK, to the US, I was probably 17 or 18, and it was when they reissued on public television the whole series again.
Right.
That's when John got his introduction, because he's 8 at that point.
Okay.
And so he and I would sit up on Sunday nights, and I would, and I'm sure I hit him with every spoiler. Oh my God, I remember this. Oh, you're going to hate this film. Oh, this is super creepy. And so, yeah, so I came at it really as an original fan.
Right.
And he came at it as a fan of the original series, but as in its second life.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a quick story.
Yeah, totally.
So when John came out of the interview for Captain Jack with Russell and Phil, I think, and all the producers of the show from the BBC, he happened to be with my daughter in London.
Okay.
She and John are very close, and she was over there to visit him. And he knew he had nailed it when he got and when he got the call that he was going to be Captain Jack on Doctor Who, he called me, but he was so excited he couldn't talk. And my daughter Claire was a kind of a Doctor Who fan, but really not. And she's like, John is running up a wall in Covent Garden, Mom, and I am just standing here, and the other women, there's an old lady looking at him like thinks she's nuts. And he literally did, like, because he's from the theater.
Right.
He did a run up a wall and a backflip. He was so excited when he got the call.
That's awesome.
But he knew I would appreciate how awesome it was because I couldn't tell anybody.
Right. I love it when... I think that's always so cool when somebody who's a fan of a particular thing gets a chance to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, David, a couple doors down here, was a comic book fan, and now he's on all these comic book movies.
Yeah.
Although I've heard that Catherine Tate's the opposite, that she has nothing.
No, but she's a riot.
Yeah.
And we love Catherine, because one of the things that John, after we would have a couple of drinks at night when we were working on projects in the UK, she's got a sketch comedy show she used to do.
Oh, right.
Oh,
I've seen
God.
Some pieces on, and I mean, it's absolutely hilarious.
She does this character called Nan, who is our Mung that I mentioned earlier.
Oh, no kidding.
She is, who's like no social filter and like hilarious, but good heart. And it's like,
right.
We would just put Catherine Tate's Nan sketches on, and then we'd imitate them and just be like crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, she's hilarious, and she's my daughter loves Doctor Who, but Donna is her favorite companion. I mean, she loves them all. She's like, I have special places for all of them, but Donna just makes me laugh more than anybody.
Of course, and I have said this to Russell Davies. I was so impressed and so pleased when he picked a middle-aged white woman.
Yes.
Because who had ever done that?
Right.
And you know he had to get pushback a little bit from the BBC when he suggested
100%,
that.
Oh,
100%,
yeah.
I just know he had to, and he stuck to his guns. And
yeah. But she was just such a great counterpart.
Oh my God!
You know, on that show, because she's not impressed or wowed. She gets out at whatever space station. She's like, "What are we doing?" I always love that. I always love that.
Yes, for sure.
Very good, Carol. Thank you so much. I've taken a lot of your time.
It's been my pleasure.
Oh, it's been absolutely so much fun. And so, everybody, go out, check out the Hollow Earth series. Now you can find those Torchwood books. You get the books and the pictures, just how we like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And keep reading
in any
form.
That's right. That's right. Thank you so much.
You're
welcome.
So
much for coming to Kansas City.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Awesome.